What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of DC and RC. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's my man, Ryan Clark. RC, what you doing, my brother? Grilled cheese again? Every time I see you, you eating grilled cheese like your mama never made that for you when you was a kid, man. What's going on?
Well, one, my dad cooks, not my mom, so my mother never made that for me. And number two, DC, I'm a creature of habit, bro. I'm out here in Mount Laurel. Panera is close. I just order it over. I get my tomato soup, a grilled cheese, and a green tea. That is my post-show meal. Maybe if you got a little stricter on your post-show meal, you'd be back down to your fighting weight.
Well, I'm going to say this. When I look at my face, I see no problems. And I like the way your mama run a household. She do a real good job. Guys, coming up on the show, we're going to go back and look at UFC 295. Uncle Chael joins the show to talk to us about the main event. And Ryan and I are going to draft our top fighters from the first 30 years of the UFC. But RC, last week I'm in Madison Square. You know that city loved me. Bro, it seemed like every time I walk the streets in New York, Alicia Keys just start playing in the background. The whole city is just up on their feet when I walk the streets. Hey, every time, bro. But I'm in Madison Square. History always gets made there, RC.
DC,
and
DC.
Alex Pereira
okay,
did
DC.
It again.
I have a question. Didn't you used to work on Kobe Bryant's detail? Like where they sort of
yes.
just lock you in a dark room and you explain to the world mm-hmm. sort of what's going on in mixed martial arts?
Yes.
Have you forgotten how to do that? Because what the hell is this, DC? This looks like a five-year-old trying to spell their name in cursive. Can you tell me what you were explaining about Jiří Procházka here?
All right, RC, you ready? So.
Yes.
The former champion is not traditional. He is not what you normally expect in a fighter. So what I'm telling you is most fighters go straight forward and they go backwards. Jiří Procházka's up, down. He's left. He's right. He switches stances. He's giving you fake jumping knees. But the moment he went at Volkan Ozdemir and he landed the punch that knocked him out, it was a classic 1-2, RC. So in all that craziness, to finish the fight was a 1-2. So essentially what I'm trying to do is show you how unpredictable Jiří Procházka could be. And that's why it looks like that. Because you know what else is unpredictable, RC? A first grader trying to write their name in cursive. You never know what you're going to get. And that's exactly what you're – you see that, RC? You see that, RC?
I like that.
Your boy's a politician.
I like that. That's TV.
You see that, RC?
You do, hey. DC, I'm going to tell you what. You talked about Jiří moving up, down, left, right, but eventually coming straight forward. That's exactly what happened in this fight with Alex Pereira. He was moving around. It was him staying on his feet. And I thought he confused Alex for a little while. And then eventually, the fight had to take place in the pocket. And we saw a right and then a quick left hook by Alex Pereira put Jiří Procházka down. And then elbows to the side of the head eventually took him out. Going back to that moment in Madison Square Garden, you've been there for two of Alex Pereira's championship wins. What was the feel in the arena once we realized, or once you realized, Alex Pereira again had gained the belt?
You know what was crazy? It was when he came on the scene all night, right? So Jiří came dressed like a samurai. Alex had on a big gold chain with a nice suit. The crowd went crazy, bro. This guy has this champion aura about him. And it's insane to think because he's just started. My nephew and him said, if I ever had to stand across the octagon from Alex Pereira, it would be the scariest thing I've ever done. They said, he is scary for no reason, Ryan. The dude, look at him. He's just staring. He looks like Easter Island a little bit with that big old head. And he's just staring at Jiří. Jiří doing all kind of weird stuff out there. And Alex is just staring at him. But the feeling was, we are truly in the midst of something special. This guy is we've never seen this type of fighter before type of fighter, and he's doing it at a rate that is so unexpected, and no one ever could have guessed that Alex Pereira could be who he is today in such a short period of time. So it just felt special. You could feel the magnitude of his accomplishment the moment Jiří Procházka fell and the fight was over.
You know what was crazy about it to me was Alex didn't look as aggressive as I've seen him in fights. You could tell Yuri's style sort of confused him, and he was trying to figure it out. But he has the great equalizer in combat sports, and that's power. And when he touched Yuri, it wasn't one of those falls where it's like, the guy hit me so hard, he knocked me off of my feet. It was the right connection in the right spot, and it shut the lights out. And then the elbows to finish him. When we were watching this fight in live speed, you could see a lot of tweets and a lot of people asking, was this fight stopped too quickly? And I saw it, and I put it on the group chat. You could tell he was out with the elbow that knocked him backwards. It just speaks to the power that Alex Pereira has in the pocket. But let's think about what this dude has accomplished in such a short period of time, and then ask the question why. One, it's because of who he was in kickboxing. But more than anything, it was because who his nemesis and who his why was in the UFC. His nemesis and his why was Israel Adesanya. And it was Israel Adesanya's dominance that made us want to see Alex Pereira get that opportunity. And all he did in giving every opportunity is succeed, is dominate. And now to be a two-division champ this early in his UFC career is absolutely phenomenal. And to do it in the style he does it in, this is one of the scariest humans I've ever seen in my life. And I know for people like you, DC, for people like Yuri Prochazka, that doesn't resonate with y'all, right? But to me, there's like running backs, and then there's Adrian Peterson, right? There's linebackers, and then there's Ray Lewis. And so you think about people who play a certain position or who are involved in a certain sport that transcend the physicality of even a violent sport. And I feel like Alex Pereira is one of those guys, and beating Yuri Prochazka just cemented that. And I think already this guy is a UFC Hall of Famer.
Oh, he's absolutely a Hall of Famer. That is not to be questioned. This guy, in 11 fights, Ryan, you know, Chael, who's going to join us in a second, he's an orator of words, and he will say anything. He told me, this might be the greatest amateur fighter we've ever seen, because most times when you're 9-2, you are just finishing your amateur career. This guy's 9-2, and he's won 2 belts and one in the UFC in 2 weight classes, 2 of the heavier weight classes. His performance was so good to me because, one, in another fight, he got taken down early, and he was able to defend himself on the ground, not get submitted. He also forces you to fight fights that you know is not going to be beneficial to you. You know, having to stand with Alex Pereira, at some point he's going to find a way to hurt you, whether it's with those brutal leg kicks or with his hands. He's going to find a way to hurt you, but you still are forced to stand with him. He also is a guy that knows enough to counter and score right when he needs to. Because, Ryan, you spoke to Yuri Prochazka's style causing him some confusion. That was in the second round. He looked a little bit confused. He looked worried. He looked like he got hurt. But as in when he's hurt, he's still so dangerous. And when Yuri had him hurt, he went to try to finish, and Alex is able to find that shot that put him down. The guy is just phenomenal. He's one of the nicest people you know. He's one of the best fighters we've seen in a long time. And he has done something that no one else has ever done in the UFC. Win 2 championships in 2 years. 2 years. He made his debut in Madison Square Garden 2 years ago with a double jumping knee to win. 2 years later, he has been the middleweight champ, lost the middleweight championship, earned the UFC light heavyweight title shot, won the UFC light heavyweight title. It's unreal, and I don't think it'll ever be done again, especially in this time frame.
Okay, DC, I'm gonna change this show. Right now, this show is not the DC and RC show. It's the RC UFC interview show. So I have 2 questions for you that I need you to answer. All right, here's the first one.
Okay.
With Alex Pereira's dominance over Yuri Prochazka and us and getting an opportunity to see him withstand the grappling of Jan Błachowicz, right? What he did to Sean Strickland. Are we underestimating what Israel Adesanya was able to accomplish in regaining the belt from Pereira?
Could I say something, bro? One of the first things I said after the fight to our group message and another group message I'm in, how did Izzy beat this dude? That when you ask that type of question about someone who is as great as Adesanya, you know how good the person is that he beat. I said, how did he beat him? Because when you watch him fight, he doesn't leave holes. I think we don't put enough value in that win. We don't put enough value in the fact that Izzy was able to find that shot that finished him two times. He did it in the first fight where he hurt him bad, and then he did it in the second fight to finish the fight. So, yes, we should value it more. But make no mistake about it. He was winning that fight against Adesanya. Even the second fight, he looked better than he did in the first fight against Adesanya, and Izzy caught him to knock him out. So over the course of their four times, Izzy found a lot of success early in kickboxing and got finished. Alex found a lot of success early in the last fight and got finished. So it's just two really master strategists, master strikers that find ways to end the fight. But to answer your question, yes, we do need to put more respect on Izzy's win over Alex Pereira.
You know, and also when you look at what Alex Pereira was able to accomplish, he now gets an opportunity to grab the microphone in the octagon and sort of call his shot, even though people thought Jamahal Hill would be the next opponent or the next contender for the championship. But DC, based on his call out, I feel like there was someone who may or may not have a UFC show who predicted this. My prediction is Alex Pereira beats Jiří Procházka.
Oh, I forgot about Pereira.
Right? He beats
He's Jiří. Not fighting Izzy again, bro.
And him and Izzy and Izzy right and here. Izzy comes out of
fantasy match.
Full retirement. Izzy comes back and fights Alex Pereira at UFC 300 at 205 for the belt. And here's the tweet. It said,
oh my God.
Let it go. Let it go. Hey, he said, hey, you know my dog said? He will leave you frozen like Elsa. Israel Adesanya said, let it go. So it seems like you are correct. They probably aren't fighting. But DC, did I or did I not say that this would be a fight, or at least something we were talking about for UFC 300? I am telling you, Alex Pereira doesn't want to be the UFC champion. He doesn't. He wants to haunt Israel Adesanya the rest of his life. If Israel Adesanya goes to a dance party when he's 54, Alex Pereira is going to be there. If Israel Adesanya has kids, right? At the kids' christening, guess who's going to be the priest? Alex Pereira. If Israel Adesanya does anything for the... Hey, bet this. When Israel Adesanya goes into the UFC Hall of Fame, guess who else is going to be in that class? Alex Pereira. Alex is not going to ever let Izzy do anything that he's not involved in. When you hear that call out after winning the belt at 205, what does that say about Alex Pereira's feelings about Israel Adesanya?
He doesn't like him at all. And it tells me, honestly, the rivalry means more to him than all of his accomplishments. Because Izzy's down right now, right? Izzy just lost the belt. He said he's walking away. Izzy's down. But Alex is trying to make him back relevant in the title picture because he just wants to fight him. Look, Alex doesn't talk English, but he can't say Adesanya. Adesanya, come to daddy. That's the only thing he says in English. Dude don't speak a lick of English, but he knows Izzy's name. But I feel by doing that, he gives Izzy power. Izzy doesn't have the power now. When he was the guy in the bar watching Adesanya from afar, Izzy had all the power. He had all the juice. But by calling him out, he's at home on his couch chilling. Izzy starts smiling and says, let it go. I'm going golfing. Like, he can play him that way. And guess what? If I'm Adesanya RC, I'm playing it that way because guess why? Oklahoma State beat Oklahoma the other day. We have played the Bedlam rivalry 120 times. We have lost to these dudes 97 times. We've won, what, 20? Dog, we've won 20. We have won 20. It's not a rivalry, bro. Them dudes just beat on us every single year. And we won the last one. And they're going to the SEC. If I'm the Oklahoma Board of Regents, Oklahoma State, I'm never playing them again because I got the last one.
You're going to keep
have
your one
fun
win?
With LSU and Alabama. Man, I'm taking that, and that's just what Izzy should do. Izzy should say, you know what? No. I know that it's that bad for you, so you're going to have to live with that one. You got to eat that one for the rest of your life. I don't care what you accomplish. You never getting a chance to get it back. I don't know if Izzy has that ability, but you and I both know Adesanya's petty. He made fun of the man's children. So if he's that petty, he's going to be okay sitting there and going, nope, you might have won three, but I got the last one. Live with
I'm gonna say
it.
This.
Defend your belt.
I'm going to say this, though, too, DC. As dominant as Alex has been, I think it says a lot about the how much he respects Israel Adesanya as a fighter as well. How much he knows that that dude, every time they stand across from one another, is prepared to die in hopes of beating him because they've done it four times, and you're right. He's won three of them, but they were all battles that Israel Adesanya was absolutely game for. I thought it was a cool call out. I thought somebody missed the call out early on in the night, but we're about to bring in the king of call outs, and that's Uncle Chael.
There he is. Uncle Chael. Chael Sonnen. What's up, my guy? How you doing, Chael?
Brother.
What's happening, guys? Can I respond to that? You know, I loved the call, and I think that Pierre might have even said for UFC 300, but there was also something that kind of disappointed me. RC, before you had Daniel Cormier and Stipe, or Daniel and John Jones, you had Daniel and a young man named Cael Sanderson. This was in dual meets in front of nobody. This was on ESPN in front of the entire world. I don't bring that up to embarrass Daniel. I bring that up to celebrate. These were great memories. These guys went on. They shuffled weight classes. They went on to be Olympic teammates together. I would kind of like that celebration between Piera and Izzy. At some point, I kind of like a shaking of the hands and bygones are bygones and go tell the story someday. You know, at your local bar having some peanuts. I kind of disappointed me, to be fair.
Really?
Chill.
I actually can't believe that. I thought you would have loved it. You're the king of the call out. You love a little pettiness. You don't like the fact that Alex on his night, where he becomes the two division champ, he's going back to the one dude that has bragging rights over him in the UFC?
I most certainly do from a competitive standpoint, not to mention they have a common opponent, which is Jan Blachowicz. Like, this story really tells itself. I just thought they moved on. As a matter of fact, I bring up Daniel and Cael Sanderson. One of the ways they smooth this, they changed weights and found a way to work together. I thought that's what Pierre was doing when he changed weights, kind of saying, all right, Izzy, have your fun. I'll go up here. We'll both be great. So when Pierre pulled them back in, yeah, you know what? I kind of thought, guys, you got to let this go. I love the competitor in them. I think that's how they both got to this point. I thought the Elsa reference was wonderful. It was Halloween a week ago. My daughter went as Elsa, so I got the reference better than most people. But I'd like to see these guys make up, in fairness.
Chael, let me say this. You watch these two guys, and you see Alex almost elevate Izzy on a night where, like, Izzy's down right now. But Izzy did win the last one. Chael, if you're Adesanya, are you happy that he's calling your name, but you're never giving him another? If I ever beat Cael Sanderson, regardless of how many times he beat me, I would never wrestle Cael again. He would have to live with that loss for the rest of his life. If you're Izzy, are you fighting him again?
No, and see, I mean, that is the part, fellas, that is so cool about a competitor. Like, what drives these guys? What gets them up? How do they have this courage? Alex Pereira is an amateur. If you look at his record, he's had 10 fights. If I'm wrong, it's 11. But he's also had two main events at Madison Square Garden, two different championships in between. He's beaten other world champions. He's guaranteed a spot in the Hall of Fame. Alex Pereira, I'm not sure, is any better today than the day he debuted. And I know that could be debated, but I think you'll agree that it's at least close. He might have been able to win the world title on his debut. He largely did to us what Francis Ngannou just did to boxing. Pierre was largely first. He wasn't given the chance to fight for the belt. But if you went back and told me he could have definitely won it on his first night.
Yeah, and that's what's amazing about what he's done in such a short time in the UFC. He was explosive from the minute we saw him. I mean, Joe Rogan almost bust the neck out of his black button-up on that flying knee, so I think you're absolutely right. But, Chael, earlier on that night, Tom Aspinall had one of those moments that announces to the world, I'm him. And he knocks out Sergey Pavlovich in the first round. And I felt like, and I think many people felt, he had an opportunity to say, John Jones, it's me and you. We're the two best in the world. Do you feel he missed an opportunity by not calling out Jones when he had the chance?
I think he was following the script. I mean, what we were told a week ago is kind of a tough riddle. We're told we're going to have an interim champion, which means we're going to have a healthy and willing interim title holder that's going to sit ringside and watch Stipe and John Jones fight for an undisputed belt 10 months from now. Look, we fiercely adhere to whatever rules we make up on the spot in this sport. But one thing we do know about interim titles is if the undisputed champ returns, you guys fight. Then, RC, get a load of this. We're even told that John Jones and Dan, and Stipe, whoever wins, they're both going to retire. So imagine you're Tom Aspinall in the front row. You wait for the interview. As soon as the words "I'm retired" come out of your mouth, you're now elevated to undisputed champion without throwing a punch. I think it's hard. Do you want to know something, though, RC? You want to know who does have the power and who this is really on, who's a veteran that isn't caught in his first big moment? John Jones. John Jones has the power to push everything aside and deal with Tom. All I wish John right now is well. He's dealing with an injury. We want him to get that better on a human level. But when you do talk about whose call out can really move the needle right now, it's Jones calling out Tom.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to do that. I don't think he's going to do that. He said, Tom, congratulations on the interim title. That was an awesome performance. Chill. As I look at Jones's tweet, that seems to be the overwhelming thought now, is that Tom Aspinall looked amazing. He beat Sergey Pavlovich in a round, less than a round. He's beaten everybody in less than a round. You and I were sitting doing a thing last weekend for one of our sponsors, and we got to talking about Michael Bisping, who is one of our friends, and he's a guy that is very open. We all talk for a living, but he is very guarded with his praise. Last week, he goes crazy with his praise, talking about Tom is going to be the greatest heavyweight of all time. After watching that last Saturday, does it appear more right to you that this could be the case and that Michael Bisping was not living a gimmick? He was telling us the truth.
Michael Bisping does not spare the lash, Daniel. He is not big on complimenting other people. I'm friends with Michael Bisping, and I've never been complimented by him. So, yeah, it did mean something to me when he was doing this. Now, I do think one person that was surprised with all the success of Tom, it does appear to be Tom. He seems to be a pretty humble guy. One thing that can bite a guy is when he doesn't deal with adversity and he finds himself in a fight that's harder than he's used to being in. So some of these knockouts could be a problem. One thing about John Jones, he gets credited for being so good and so technical. John Jones is a tough SOB. That people don't understand that about him.
Yes,
I fought him. He had his bone sticking through his foot. He wrapped it up in the back just to go to the press conference and told the ambulance, "You can wait for me." That dude is a legit tough guy. I think Tom is excellent. I think he's a wonderful fighter. Showing that grit, you're having a different conversation.
You know, you look at the sort of layout you gave us, right? We're going to see Stipe and John Jones. A guy like Tom Aspinall could be sitting cage side and be elevated to be the heavyweight champion. When you look at Tom Aspinall and who he is, and you spoke about some of that adversity, the skill set, though, Chael, being light on your feet, having that sort of power, being able to grapple, does Tom Aspinall have what it takes to be one of those long reigning champs that we may one day call the greatest heavyweight of all time?
He sure appears to. The one guy that I just don't know knows it is Tom. Look, maybe this is his personality, and being humble serves him best. But the last time he spoke about John Jones, he said, "I'm not ready for him." In fact, it was two fights ago. It was about 18 months ago. But Tom's exact quote was, "Before I talk about Jones, I need three more fights. I'm not ready for him." I think Tom is better than Tom knew he was. Let me tell you a real quick story. I never met Tom. So he comes up on the set of ESPN. He does his piece with Brett Okamoto. I'm off to the side. I start visiting with his father, who was also the head corner man, head trainer, laid out the game plan. I said, "Hey, are you guys out here alone, or is your wife, meaning Tom's mother, is she here?" I never met the man. He says, "Well," he pulls his phone out, says, "Tom's mom's at home. She's too nervous to watch him, so she's in bed." I said, "You mean she's in bed watching the pay-per-view, or she was relaxed enough to sleep?" He said, "No, she's awake," and he shows me their conversation. The father sent Mrs. Aspinall a message, and all it said is, "The lad done good tonight." She wrote back. "He always does." And you know that emoji that's like Z? And she went back to sleep. Now, I couldn't believe this. This was a great moment that the father shared this with. I even said to him, "Sir, is this private or can I talk about it?" He said, "You can talk about it." I then start talking with one of his cornermen. The cousin is a nutritionalist. All the cornermen are good buddies that have been there from the beginning. One of the corner tells me the only thing Tom's better at than fighting is being a father. I said, why do you say that? That's the biggest compliment you can give a man. Why'd you just say that to me? We just met. He said he has three children. One has special needs. He said the wife is not here because they could not find what they deemed as parents adequate health care. So she stayed home. She missed the trip. She missed the moment. She missed the spotlight to be with their children. That meant something to me. I know I'm off course, but I wanted you guys in the whole world to hear that.
That's amazing.
Well, that's actually one of the things about Tom Aspinall that stands out to most. And that's why people are drawn to him. He's a special type of human being. And it sounds like his wife is too and his entire family. But you're talking about a father who gave up everything to train his kid for that night jail. So that reaction doesn't surprise me. The lad done good. Because when you train your son from 8 to be the champion of the world, a lot of times your kid becomes the champion of the world. We have seen it from time and time again. Terrell, from Kerry Colad in wrestling to some of the other great wrestlers we have seen before. When the father makes that sacrifice, that's what happens. But let me ask you this. I was sitting with Mick Maynard the other day, and I said, what's next for Tom? Do you blow up the fight between Stipe and Jones, or does this guy fight again? Do you see a world where Tom Aspinall fights one of those guys, Chael, or do you believe that we have our first time where someone defends the interim championship?
Well, I'll tell you this, a little bit of a false narrative is that John Jones is scared to fight the next crew. Now, 1 week ago, it wasn't Tom. The big boogie monster on our chat boards, Daniel, was that John Jones would not fight Sergi. That's the one to beat him. Well, 1 week before that, it was John Jones will not fight Francis Ngannou. Now, today, it's John Jones won't fight Aspinall. I got to defend John on this because when Sergi was the backup fighter, John Jones told Dana White, I'll fight Stipe as planned. If something happens to him, I will fight Pavlovich. So it's not a matter of if John's willing to do it. He already agreed to do it. And I just bring that to you because the same thing goes for Stipe. Stipe already agreed to beat Pavlovich. The organization elected to hold both of those guys, Jones and Stipe, out. So I think in Tom's role, he really needs to get busy, really needs to go call for a fight. Surreal Gunn, of course, tried to get dibs on this, and I can't blame him. But to remind you, Tom Aspinall flew all the way to Paris, sat in the front row to get called out by Surreal. When Surreal had that mic and he had the opportunity to share the fame, he took it from Tom, made Tom go back to the airport and fly home with no interview. Tom ought to take it from him. He ought to sit and check some of his options. I don't hate the idea of Tom versus Stipe. I don't know why nobody's suggesting it.
I don't know why they didn't offer Stipe that fight to begin with, or maybe they did. I asked Tom, I said, Tom, did they offer Stipe the fight? He goes, yes, they wanted no part of it. Sergey said that. Sorry, it was Sergey said that they did offer the fight to Miocic, and Stipe turned it down. Stipe wants the Jones fight. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chill. I'm going to kind of, the producer's telling me do something. I'm going somewhere different. You said you want to see guys wash their hands and be friends. Are you ready to wash your hands and be friends with Jorge Masvidal? Because Jorge Masvidal came at you last weekend. And you, I mean, chill, I don't get it. I don't get it, Uncle Chill.
I'm not. And can I shoot with you? He hurt my feelings. That came out of nowhere. He said terrible things about me, guys. But you want to know the bad news? They were all true. He didn't go lie about me. It's the truth that hurts. And this guy known me 17 years. Like, he really knows how to stick it to me. And I was kind of trying to show him the playful side. He challenged me to a fight. I said, were you going to kick me with the, are you allowed to kick with the leg that's got the ankle monitor? Are they going to give you a juice box from prison between rounds or a water bottle? That's playful. He doesn't have an ankle monitor. He's not in prison. These are jokes. He was telling the truth about me. That hurts.
hey, nothing stings like the truth, Chael. I already know what you're saying, my boy. Listen, you tweeted out your UFC 300 predictions. You want to tell us a little bit about the card you have?
Now, I must tell you, I got this from a guy named Tommy in the Bronx, and he's a source that I go to, and Tommy's pretty solid. He's extremely solid on anything to do with the Diaz boys. And I just said, Tommy, can I put this out? I'm just going to put it out and see how people respond. I'll tell you guys what. One of the big fights, and I don't think we're going to do a spoof. So many people think when they hear 300 that this is one of the times that Dana's willing to have fun, like, say, bringing Ronda back or bringing Lesnar back. If you wanted to just have fun, you'd book Masvidal against Gaethje and you put up the BMF belt. I just don't think that's the direction Dana's going to go in. Dana White is very disciplined that he never does a match unless the outcome has a potential meaning. So I don't think we're going to do any kind of spoofs. I think we're still looking at it. I do think there's a very good reason that Sean is being turned around so quickly against DDP. I think that they would like to see Adesanya come back, and whether that's a rematch with Strickland or that's DDP versus Adesanya was so hot, it was melting airwaves. They brought in Africa.
Yes.
One guy was white, one guy was black. Media didn't even know how to touch this. This thing was so uncomfortable, but everybody wanted a little bit more of it. I think they'll try to rehance that feud if possible.
They missed the boat a little bit on that one, Uncle Chael. That was one that needed to happen, and it'll happen at some point. I got to be honest, though. That UFC 300 card, let's call it underwhelming. Chael, I might not even buy the pay-per-view. And, I mean, I'm sitting at the Octagon side right there for that one.
That's because you get it for
free. I'm not trying to watch Merab and Henry Cejudo on the main card of UFC 300. While it's a great fight, that's not one of those. We need bigger fights, especially when 200 had the fights that they had and 100 had the fights that they had. Yeah, Chael, I'm in a little disagree there. We're going to bring a spoof fight. Somebody's coming back. We might wheel Brock Lesnar out there after all of his WWE success. But somebody got to be out there. Chael, thank you for joining us, man, as always.
Thank you, Uncle
Chael. You are a friend of the show, and we appreciate your time, brother. We appreciate you.
I've had it with you both.
RC.
Goodbye.
RC, he's the best. He's the best, RC.
I love him.
Let me ask you this, though, RC. What should they do at heavyweight? Like, what is the right answer to how they should handle the heavyweight division? Does Jones say, you know what, man, I'm not fighting Miocic for legacy. I'll go fight the kid.
You know what's funny, DC, is I had a thought, and I'm going to ask you this thought, and it may be stupid. Before the fight, Sergey Pavlovich seemed extremely dangerous and scary. it almost seemed that now since Francis Ngannou was gone, that that was the scariest man in the heavyweight division. I'm not saying the best fighter. I'm saying the scariest man. And so when if you did offer Stipe that fight, I think at that time it seemed like, holy hell, I don't really want that fight. I don't want Sergey. Here is what I would do. I would have to think that Stipe thinks or believes he could beat Tom Aspinall. I would think Tom Aspinall, even though he has this great record and he has this amazing finish, I don't think people fear him in that way. I'd make Stipe Miocic, Tom Aspinall, while John Jones is recovering. And your hope there, and I don't even think it matters, your hope would be that Tom Aspinall wins that fight, and that says to the rest of the world, this guy is the real deal. And so he fights John Jones when he comes back. And one of two things happened. John Jones cements himself, and I think he's already there, cements himself as the GOAT. It's no argument, right? I think it's him and Khabib Nurmagomedov right now. He wins that fight over Tom Aspinall. We have no more questions. And he could ride off into the sunset, or he could defend his belt if he wanted to. If Tom Aspinall beats Stipe and beats John Jones, you have one of two things that happen. They have a rematch, which everybody in the world would want to see, or you have an undisputed, unquestioned heavyweight champion of the world. And that's what the UFC needs in that division again.
You know what's crazy is like that would be, so you got a lot of jobs. The one I didn't know you had was Tom Aspinall's manager or some part of Tom Aspinall's team, because that's just ideal for Tom Aspinall. Like to get to be able to fight the greatest heavyweight of all time with the chance to win. And if you beat him, you fight who may be the greatest heavyweight of all time. Yeah, Ryan, that is you being Tom Aspinall's business advisor. But the reality is that won't happen. That's not something that you think these guys would agree to. I don't believe that Stipe says, yeah, I'm going to go and fight this guy who is the interim champ. He's dangerous. He's tough. And give away a fight in John Jones where you know that's you get money more fight. Money. When you fight John Jones, you get more money, bro. And it's like, why would Stipe at 41 risk that to fight Tom Aspinall? I don't think it happens. I think Tom Aspinall is going to have to wait and see. And again, he was injured. Right, that's probably what was most impressive is that he said the moment he got the fight, he got excited, so he started training really hard, and he tore a muscle in his back. So this guy wasn't even healthy going into the octagon last weekend. He's a stud. He's a savage. Every word you can use to describe a great fighter is what Tom Aspinall is.
Well, all that happens there, DC, is you got to hope this. You got to hope that Dana White has a conversation with John Jones and Stipe Miocic and says, hey, guys, whichever one of you wins, please don't retire. Don't retire. Give me one more fight. I'll break the bank for that one more fight, and you get an opportunity to fight Tom Aspinall where there could be some passing of the torch to where we really feel we have a heavyweight champion we want to get behind. But
that
30
would
years
suck.
Of the
RC,
UFC.
Wait, real quick. That would suck.
Yep.
That would suck, RC. That would be ideal because just like professional wrestling, right? When you're ready to lose and retire, you get pinned by the next guy to carry the torch.
Yes.
In fighting, it doesn't always work out that way, right? Jones could fight Aspinall and beat him and still retire with the belt. So then it's not ideal, but at least you get the opportunity. But if they fight each other, Miocic and Jones and whoever wins, and they just kind of walk away, there will always be that lingering thought or question, is this guy the real champ?
Yep. Well, DC, it's 30 years of the UFC. We're coming up on UFC 300. So we are about to have our UFC 30 draft. Corporate Jake, what are the rules?
All right, guys, pretty simple. We'll draft from the UFC's first 30 years, 5 picks each, snake draft. So RC will go first. Then, Daniel, you have second and third pick, and we'll go until everybody has 5 picks each. So, RC, who is your first pick?
Okay, let's do it.
Yep, so with my first pick of the UFC 30 draft, I draft Khabib Nurmagomedov. That is my number one pick, 29-0. I am going with the Eagle. All right, DC, you're up.
Are we picking on merit or business, right? Because I thought for sure you was going to take Conor McGregor. I thought you were going to take Conor McGregor, man. I don't know.
Hey, DC. All right, with my DC, first can I pick, be honest?
Go ahead.
I'm picking off of pettiness because I know you'd want him, so I just took him. If I'm being honest. I didn't even want him on my team. I just took him so you don't get him.
I wanted Habib, man. I wanted Habib. Damn, man. All right, with my first pick in my draft, I am going to take Israel Adesanya. I'm taking Israel Adesanya. Okay. I'm taking Israel Adesanya because he was a long-reigning champion, and he sold pay-per-view. So he's about as safe as they come in terms of business and fighting.
Okay.
My second pick.
You got another pick.
Is going to be George St. Pierre. I'm taking George St. Pierre, who I believe, right next to Habib, is the greatest fighter of all time. So I'm taking GSP.
Okay. All right. So at number two, I'm going John Jones. I'm going John Jones at number two. Got to give me, I think he's one of the greatest fighters of all time. He got some stuff with him. He got some stuff with him that keeps him from being the greatest, but you cannot knock what this man was able to do in the octagon and that level of skill. At number three, I'm taking Conor McGregor. I'm taking Conor McGregor for the same reason, DC, you talked about Israel Adesanya. This man is a double champ. He was lightning in the bottle. And from a business standpoint, there's no one that's been better in the game than he has.
Yeah, my third pick, I am going to take Anderson Silva. Because what Anderson Silva was to his time was unbelievable. He was a long-reigning middleweight champion. He still holds the record for most consecutive wins to start a UFC career. So I am taking, with my third pick, Anderson Silva. At number four, my fourth pick, fighting out of San Jose, California, by way of Lafayette, Louisiana, I am taking Daniel Cormier. Because when you're the double champ gets chosen in the top 10 fighters. I am honestly picking my list, RC, based on a list that was just released for the top 30 fighters of all time. So that's where I was, like right in this range here, number six or seven. So that's where I'm picking myself.
Okay. So I'm on my fourth, right? At number four, I'm going with Amanda Nunes. I know that sometimes we get caught up in what the men can do in this sport. There has been no more dominant champion than what Amanda Nunes was in her fighting career. She's retired now, and when she walked away to me as the GOAT of all women's mixed martial arts. Now, this is a hard one. Okay, number five. Number five.
Done after
number
that.
Five. I don't like
choose wisely.
I don't like this one, DC. And number five, and I know, like, to everybody else, this guy, the way he ended his career, his reign at champion wasn't long enough. At number five, though, I'm going to take the guy who made me fall in love with mixed martial arts in the UFC, and that's Chuck Liddell. Watching Chuck Liddell on those UFC greatest knockout CDs and DVDs you could buy from Best Buy is what got me into it, bro. Sitting at home watching Spike TV and seeing him fight against Randy Couture and watching him fight, you know, Tito Ortiz, like, this was the dude that I said, he is absolutely out of his freaking mind to walk in here with these long, skinny arms, this big old belly, this wild fighting style, and really just be a part of what made you love the sport.
Yeah, it's a tremendous pick. Chuck Liddell meant so much to the mixed martial arts community, and he still does today. My fifth and final pick, he's a small guy, but he was amazing, bro. This guy has the record for most title defenses at 125 pounds. I don't think it'll ever get touched. I'm taking Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson.
Yep.
Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson may be the most talented mixed martial artist I have ever seen in terms of pure skill, in terms of just his ability to learn, his ability to improvise. Do you remember when he took that kid from New Mexico, threw him up in the air, and armbarred him on the way down?
Yes.
Demetrius Johnson used to get a lot of flack.
The coldest move ever, bro.
He threw him up
ever
and arm barred him on the way down. He called it the mousetrap, son. He called it the mousetrap. His name is Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson. So while he was just real good, he still was also kind of cool. Like, bro, yeah. He got a lot of flack for not finishing, and he finished a lot of fighters. It was Ray Borg is who he did that to. Threw him up in the air, armbarred him on the way down. He's one of the best mixed martial artists of all time. So I'd put him on my top five list.
DC, that's a good list, man. Normally, I look at your list, and I say that they're terrible. Obviously, I picked my first round pick purely off of pettiness and being messy, and I'm comfortable with this. I like my list. My list is great. Your list is great as well. I thought to go Ronda Rousey at four over Amanda Nunes, but when I look at Amanda Nunes's greatness, Amanda Nunes actually beating Ronda Rousey, Amanda Nunes beating Holly Holm. More importantly, Amanda Nunes beating Cyborg. She was absolutely dominant in her career. That's why I went with her. And Chuck Liddell made me fall in love with the sport. So there was no way I was leaving him off my list.
Emotional investment in the people means a lot to you. That's one of your terms right now. You should make a t-shirt that says emotional investment.
Emotional investment. You got a lot of emotional investment in my bank account, too. You got a lot of assets.
Absolutely.
It's time, Jake, Corbett, Jake. Let's get it.
All right, guys. Following his massive head kick KO win over Matt Frivola, who DC called corn roller during the walkout, Benoit Saint-Denis called out the likes of Justin Gaethje and Dustin Poirier. DC, tap in or tap out on Saint-Denis calling out top five lightweights.
I love it. I love that he tried. But it ain't nothing but a pipe dream. He not going to get neither of those dudes. Them dudes looking at Benoit Saint-Denis going, I ain't fighting this dude, man. Because there's just no benefit to it right now. That's why you see so many guys fighting between each other. It was crazy to see Justin Gaethje give Fazeev the chance because nobody else would have. So if he does have a chance to get one of them, it's Justin Gaethje because he's a psychopath and he'll fight anyone. But I don't think he really gets any traction on that call-out. But great call-out.
Now, yeah, I tap out on this. I mean, the head kick was crazy. You know, you catch your opponent floating away from you. You throw it at the right time. Catch him, knock him out. Thought it was beautiful. That don't get you Poirier. That don't get you Justin Gaethje. He's going to have to wait a while for that. And by the time he gets to that point, I don't even know if these dudes are going to even be tripping about fighting. Corporate Jake, what's up?
Hey guys, Tony Ferguson has called upon former Navy SEAL and marathon runner David Goggins to help train him ahead of UFC 296. The videos are quite intense. So, RC, tap in or tap out on Ferguson's call for help to Goggins.
You know what? I tap in on it for this. Like, turn over every stone. Tony Ferguson understands that he is closer to the end than the beginning. If you listen to David Goggins or ever read any of his books, you know the way that he focuses on being mentally tough. And Tony Ferguson's a guy that's already told you what he can do physically and showed you that. Now it's about finding that extra edge. And if he feels having David Goggins not only in his training camp, but in his ear constantly makes him a stronger, better man and better fighter, I'm all for it.
I tap in on making sure you leave no stone unturned. Great call by the former interim champion. He wants to try to see if it's going to change something for him. He's going to be in shape, but I don't know that the fatigue of our cardio is going to be the issue. That's not what's wrong with Tony Ferguson.
Right.
It's not that he's not preparing himself right. It's just other things, other reasons are why he's losing. And I don't know if David Goggins is going to be able to change that because, dude, the weathering and the beatings that you take in that octagon can't be fixed just by mental approach and working harder in the gym. It just takes something a little bit more. And also, I worry. You know, Goggins, he works so hard. He don't care how you feel, and he's going to make you work. I hope he doesn't beat Tony down and overtrain him. Corporate Jake.
Now ranked number 7 following his win over Derek Lewis, Jonathan Almeida called out former interim champ Ciryl Gane for a heavyweight contention bout. DC, tap in or tap out on Almeida versus Gane?
I tap in on the fight. But again, if I'm Ciryl Gane, I'm not doing that. I am not fighting Jailton Almeida, especially after I saw him take Derek Lewis down 20 times over the course of five rounds. Ciryl Gane is in a very unique position right now. If Tom Aspinall is the champion, he's a striker. Ciryl has a real opportunity to go fight another striker. Don't fight a guy that's going to take you down over and over again. Tapping on the fight, I don't think it'll happen.
I tap in on the fight. I love to see it. I love to see Ciryl Gane give a guy like Jailton Almeida a chance, but he ain't doing that because there's no benefit to it. There's no benefit to him. Like, you just heard DC say that Justin Gaethje gave Rafael Fiziev a chance, and people were surprised about that because fighting down doesn't help you win championships, especially when stylistically, it's not a great matchup for you. So I tap out on this from a Ciryl Gane standpoint, but I'd love to see the fight.
All right, guys, over the weekend, Dana White officially announced that he has booked the Las Vegas Sphere for the UFC Mexican Independence card next September. RC, tap in or tap out of the UFC and the Sphere?
I tap in on it. But didn't the Sphere lose like $7 billion in like a month or something like that? I can't get like fired for giving you misinformation numerically. I tap in on it because the one thing Dana White has always done is push the envelope. Continue to try to make this brand bigger, better, and different from other things. And so I tap all the way in on this. What could be more Las Vegas right now than fighting in the Sphere?
I tap in on it because Dana White loves challenges, and that's going to challenge him. He's not only going to get challenged trying to put on a show, but by some of the big promises he's making. He said, I'm going to put on the greatest martial arts show of all time. That is pressure. And if I know Dana, he loves pressure and he loves challenges. So I'm excited to see what they could do inside the Sphere. But could you imagine, RC, when these fighters walk out, if their home countries or home states are just floating around the Sphere as they're walking out?
That's tight.
It's going to be sick.
All right, guys, lastly, we've shown tag team MMA on this show, but let's up the stakes. How about 3v3? RC, tap in or tap out 3v3 MMA, and who would your team be? So it's you plus two other people.
First off, I tap out. Here's why I tap out. You're not finna club punch me, homie. Like, that's not skill. It don't take skill for me to be mixing with this dude and then get a bomb upside the head. I've been in fights in Thailand. That's not cool. And my team would be Daniel Cormier, right? And number three would be Steven Seagal or that security guard guy, the black dude that teach everybody self-defense. That would be my team.
RC.
I want people that go like grab fingers and stuff and like.
RC, run that clip back. That reminds me of Club Strawberries. There's this club called Strawberries back in Lafayette when I was growing up. We used to get down in there. But that's how the fights look. You can't fight in a 3-on-3 fight. And look at that brother with the red hair. That brother big. He looked like he just wanted to punch somebody upside the head. But then what I like most about him is he a little fat, but he don't care. He's sexy, and he knows it. Watch him dance on him. Big boy, you go start a fight. After winning the fight, then you dance on him. Look at that.
Also,
let all that shake, big boy.
Do you just have to tap out? You had to just tap out one guy or knock out one guy? Because everybody else was still fighting. Is that how it works?
It's just and a two, stupid sport.
You talk about my man, Body. He didn't got his appendage taken out. He got a scar on his stomach, man. What type of people
RC,
are we getting inside the cage?
Hey, RC, can I say something, RC? You and I were talking last week at Inside the NFL, and we spoke about being important or pretending to be important. And if you pretend enough, you might get some unique opportunities. You're not smart because you pretend to be smart. You're a smart guy, and you're involved in a lot. But last week, you went to the White House, right? What did you do there?
Well, we went there to talk about college athletics, mainly college football and NIL, being that the NCAA has been meeting with the president and his staff. And we also talked about the working conditions and the health conditions of some of these college students, whether it be mentally or physically, once they leave college and now they're on their own. I thought it was great conversation. I thought they listened. I thought they asked the right questions. And I'm going to be honest, DC, I'm not a political guy. Right. And I'm not a historian. I'm sort of one of those dudes that's from the West Bank of New Orleans. And it's like you get what you get and you don't pitch a fit. But when you're in some of these rooms in the White House that because we got an opportunity to take a tour and they say, you know, most people see it as a museum. You're going to get to see it as a house. And they're walking you into these different rooms and they're telling you the stories of how these rooms came to be this color, why this china is in this room, what this wallpaper is, where or what happens on the lawn, and you get an actual opportunity to go in the Oval Office where we probably spent 10 to 15 minutes talking to the president and him giving us stories about why the furniture was chosen, why a pitcher was chosen, why a bust was chosen. Like, it gives you such a respect for history, such a respect for the history of this country. And nah, man, it's not perfect. It's not a perfect country. But when you think about those that have come before you and laid some of the foundation, so me and you, bro, me as a black man, you as a black man, could get an opportunity to sit on this show and talk about a sport that we love and get paid to do it, right? Get paid to do it, to have those freedoms from where people have come from. It was one of those great experiences, and I hope in having those conversations with the president and his staff about not just controlling NIL, but allowing these players, these young student athletes, to continue to profit off of their name, image, and likeness, no matter who they are, to where it's not just the top guys who get an opportunity to benefit. It's the 85th guy on the scholarship roster who is putting in just as much work weekly and daily to be a part of that team.
You know, I've been to the White House, but I went to the Senate, and the most impressive room to me is that wrestling room they got in the basement. They got a wrestling room in the basement, dog, of the Capitol building. It's crazy. They got a wrestling room. And RC, I love wrestling. So, hey, look at me. Look at me, RC, and look at my boys. Look at what came out yesterday.
Let's go.
I mean, look at that. The National High School team rankings came out last week night. And look at them, RC. Look at little Gilroy. In the top 10 to start the year. How about that, RC? How about that?
DC, congrats, bro. How happy are you for those kids, man, and for those young men that they get an opportunity to know that they've worked this hard and now their work is paying off?
I mean, it's amazing, right? From all the college scholarships to now being recognized as one of the top 10 teams in the entire United States is unbelievable. Big goals coming for this year. A lot of work to be done. But it's amazing whenever the work. Hey, year five is starting, RC. Year five is starting right now. Or year six, we lost the COVID year. But year six, from where we started, 18 kids on the roster, to now we have 62 kids on our wrestling roster. Look at Gilroy in the top 10 and living among the best in the country. Congratulations to all the kids. Now let's get to work, RC.
Well, DC, y'all remember now, DC and RC, every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcast, 12 a.m. midnight on ESPN2 as well. We love you guys. We appreciate you. Madison Square Garden was rocking. DC was killing it. My boy was all over the place. And all he said was he had Alicia Keys theme music follow him everywhere that he goes. Catch us next week. We love y'all.